I going to do? By the time Dad came home from work, things were calm. Donald was napping. Mom was cooking. Leslie, Wavy, and I were upstairs playing Barbies. Or Leslie and I were playing Barbies. Wavy was playing with Ken. We never used him unless Barbie got married, but Wavy undressed him and made him trade clothes with a Barbie.
He can't wear that, Leslie said.
Everything had to be just right with her. She and I had matching rooms right out of the JCPenney catalog. Hers pink, mine yellow. Wavy in her black leather boots didn't fit in the catalog. She tore open the catalog and made surprising things happen, like Ken in a dress. Dad came upstairs and stood in the doorway with a drink in his hand. He looked tired. It was the first time he'd been home before our bedtime all week. Mom stood behind him, clutching her hands together.
Hi, girls, Dad said.
Hi, Daddy,
Leslie and I said.
Hi, Vonnie.
Not Vonnie, Wavy said.
Excuse me?
Not Vonnie. Kellen calls me Wavy.
Who's Kellen? Mom said.
Jesse Joe Kellen.
We all came under the authority of the unknown Jesse Joe Kellen because Wavy wouldn't answer to any other name. After dinner, even though it was a school night, Leslie and I got to stay up late. Wavy taught us to play poker with the money out of our piggy banks. We had to loan her money since she didn't have any. She didn't even have pajamas or a clean pair of undies. From the bottom of the stairs, Dad yelled,
Vonnie, come down here.
Wavy didn't move, and after a minute, Mom called,
Wavy, come down here.
When we got downstairs, Dad was saying,
For God's sake, Brenda, I thought we were done with this.
What was I supposed to do? A complete stranger dropped off my niece and my nephew. Was I supposed to say, Oh, I'm sorry, my husband and I decided we were done with this? Dad turned and looked at the three of us.
Vonnie? Wavy, have you been going to school this year?
Wavy nodded.
What grade are you in?
She held up three fingers.
You see how easy that was, Brenda? Val's been sending her to school, so maybe you could cut the hysterics, okay?
Girls, go back upstairs, Mom said.
Is Wavy going to stay? I said.
Mom looked at Dad, who looked at the ceiling. For a while, she said. Now go to bed. You have school tomorrow. Wavy and Donald stayed. Dad made Wavy promise she wouldn't sneak out at night, but it was still two magical weeks of Wavy's games and Leslie's cries of protest every time we played a prank. On the last day of school, Wavy went with me, so everyone got to see my strange cousin who didn't eat or talk, but who wasn't afraid to pump a swing as high as it would go and jump off. That Saturday, Aunt Val came to get them.
She looks like a cheap hooker,
Dad muttered as she came up the sidewalk. I thought she looked beautiful, in a tight black dress that laced up the front and left her legs bare, all the way down to her tall black shoes and her red-painted toenails. She had flower tattoos on her arms and shoulders, and when she hugged me, she smelled of perfume and cigarettes.
Val, why didn't you tell me you needed to leave the kids with us? Mom said.
I'm so sorry, Bren. It was a last-minute thing.
To make up, Aunt Val brought presents. Earrings for Mom, a money clip for Dad, necklaces for Leslie and me, a bracelet for Wavy, and a toy car for Donald. When he got up from his nap, she swung him around until he squealed. After that, we had to look around and acknowledge that Wavy wasn't there.
Where's Vonnie?
When nobody answered, Aunt Val said,
Oh, where's Wavy? Kellen started that. So where is she?
Amy, will you go upstairs and get your cousin? Dad said.
I found her in my closet, reading one of my library books. I hoped she wouldn't steal it. Your mom wants you to come down, I said. With a deep sigh, Wavy got up and glided past me, leaving the book on the closet floor. Downstairs, she slipped between the sofa and the lamp so nobody could touch her.
Hey, pretty girl, how have you been? Aunt Val said.
Wavy didn't look at her.
I brought you a present.
Aunt Val held out a jewelry box, but I was the one who delivered it to Wavy. She didn't even open the box to look at it.
Are you staying for supper, Val?
Dad looked at his watch.
Oh, no, Bill, thanks, but we better get on the road before it's dark.
Well, let's get the kids packed, Mom said. I helped pack a bag of hand-me-down clothes from the ladies at church. On the front porch, Mom and Aunt Val hugged.
We don't see enough of you, Mom said.
I know. We keep saying we'll get together, but it doesn't work out.
What about Christmas? Even if you and Liam are busy, maybe the kids could come for Christmas.
That'd be nice. I know Wavy would like that, Aunt Val said.
I didn't know if she would, because when they left, she walked out to the car carrying a grocery bag of clothes and didn't even look back at me. It hurt my feelings, but when I went to bed that night, I found the bracelet Aunt Val had given Wavy under my pillow. Maybe it didn't mean anything to her, but it meant something to me.
12. Kellen. July 1978. Most days after school let out, I took Wavy to the shop. Let her hang out while I worked. After old man Kutchin showed her what the adding machine was for, she opened the folder of receipts and started adding them. She was good at math, unlike me and Kutchin. Her deposits and receipts always added up the same. The garage was kind of run down and grease-smelling, but she seemed to like being there, even if she didn't quite belong there. Sometimes I'd come in from the shop and find her at the desk, like walking in on a wild fawn balancing the books. With school out, I didn't get to see as much of her, but that afternoon, when I came back from the cemetery, she was in the office. She was kneeling in my chair, looking at the parts catalog. Seeing me come in so hot, she smiled and turned the fan on the desk toward me. Sweat was dripping out of my hair, and my dress shirt was so wet it stuck to me as I peeled it off. For a couple minutes, I stood in front of the fan trying to get dry enough to put on a fresh shirt. On the corner of the desk stood a pop bottle. I picked it up, still cool and half full. As soon as I tipped the bottle to my mouth, Wavy jumped out of the chair with this yelp. Startled me so bad I damn near choked on a mouthful of pop.
"Germs," she said.
"I'm sorry, I wasn't even thinking. I'll get you a new one. I know you don't want to drink after me."
She shook her head.
"My germs, in you."
"Your germs? I'm not afraid of your germs."
I winked at her, feeling like an idiot for making the mistake, and took another swig of her pop.
She frowned at me so hard, her forehead wrinkled up. I offered her the bottle. I didn't figure she'd take a drink, but she put it up to her nose and sniffed. When she handed it back to me, she didn't have anything else to say about germs. Instead, she took my sweaty shirt and put it on the hanger I'd left lying on the desk. I went out to put flowers on my ma's grave. I'm the only one left around to do it. It's stupid, but I guess I always feel like I ought to dress up a little. Try to look nice when I go out there. I should have gone earlier, but it was 100 goddamn degrees. I took the shirt from her and went to hang it in my locker. While I rummaged around for a dry shirt, I could feel her watching me. When I turned around, she pointed at me and drew an X in the air. My tattoo. There I was with my shirt off, and that must have been the first time she'd seen it. "It's a calumet, you know, a peace pipe, and the three arrows for the tribal districts, for the three Choctaw chiefs. Apakshanubi,
Mashulatubi,
and Pushmataha. Like my belt buckle. I got it after I left home. Went down to live with my granny on the res. Hung around, thinking I was gonna be an Indian or something. Pissed my granny off. She wanted me to stay in school. The calumet's pipe bowl was just under my left collarbone. The three arrowheads came up and touched the right. They crossed over my chest all the way down to the bottom of my ribs. I never thought much about it. But it kinda embarrassed me. Not the tattoo, but trying to explain it with Wavy giving me the look that meant I was important. I got to blushing with her staring, memorizing me. So I pulled on the first shirt I could lay my hand to, an old uniform shirt from 4 years back when I first started working for Kutchin. Jesse Joe embroidered over the breast pocket and tight in the shoulders. I buttoned it on anyway. because I felt strange having my shirt off now that Wavy had seen my tattoo. When I sat down at the desk, I saw what she was doing with the parts catalog. She'd gone through all my scribbly notes and filled out the order form. I drank up the rest of her pop while I checked it over. She didn't get annoyed about that. Like she figured I was the boss, so she needed to get my okay. Leaning on the desk next to me, Wavy ran her finger across the blotter calendar and brought it to rest on the 7th. At some point, just doodling, I'd drawn a heart around the number. Yeah, today's my ma's birthday. That's why I took the flowers out. Wavy still had her finger on the day, so I knew she was waiting for more. I was afraid to say anything else for fear I'd get to crying, when I'd managed the whole day not to. Her name was Adina. She died 4 years ago. In the winter. But she liked the summer better. That's why I take her flowers for her birthday. I wiped my eyes quick, and Wavy was polite enough not to look at me while I did it. She moved her finger down to the 19th and then brought it up to touch her chest. Is that your birthday? The 19th? Wavy nodded. That was rare, her telling me something I hadn't even asked. She was usually more interested in finding things out, like with the tattoo. When I picked up a pen, she leaned forward on her elbows, waiting to see what I was going to do. It needed to be big, to let her know I thought it was important. In big enough letters to fill the whole square, I wrote, Wavy's birthday. She looked so happy I went back to the date and drew a heart around the 19. When I laid the pen down, she put her hand on my arm, like she trusted me. Then she stepped between my knees and slid her hand up my arm to the back of my neck. She leaned in so close, her cheek almost touched mine. I kept real still, like you would if a little bird came and landed on your finger. For half a minute, I didn't even breathe. It wasn't like me trying to hug her on the farmhouse porch. She'd done this herself. She pressed her chin into my shoulder, and then damned if she didn't sniff my hair. I knew I had to be rank, but she sniffed at me like I was fresh as daisies. Exhaled in my ear and took another deep breath. To leave her a way to escape, I only put one arm around her. She trembled so hard I figured she was set to run away, so I loosened my arm to let her. But instead she put her other arm around my neck and pressed her bony little self against my belly. She was so small it kind of scared me.
"Hold on tight," she said,
so I put both my arms around her and squeezed. I turned my head to sniff her hair the way she did mine, honeysuckle and what I figured the ocean must smell like, sharp and salty. She giggled, and I had the weirdest feeling she was about to say something else, but someone in the shop called, "Is Kellen around?" "Liam." I let go of Wavy, and as soon as I pushed my chair back, she got on her knees and scrambled under the desk. Barely made it before Liam opened the office door and started in about this party he was throwing out at the ranch. Before the party, he wanted me to go out drinking with him. He never was happy having just one thing going. "There's this girl I want you to meet out at the Rusted Bucket," he said. It was pretty much the last thing I wanted to do. But all I cared about was getting Liam out of there without seeing Wavy. Sometimes when I'd look at that scar on her lip, I thought about killing him. Right then, I thought about the big old Colt revolver Kutchin kept in the desk drawer. Instead, I came around the desk toward the door, so Liam had to step back into the garage. "Well, I need a shower first. I'm filthy," I said as I pulled the office door shut behind me. "So go take a shower and meet me out there." "At the bucket?" "Yeah, we'll have a few drinks and then take the girls out to the ranch." Girls. By the time I showed up at the bar, Liam had these two girls in a booth with him. A pretty blonde with stripper tits and this brunette with a snake tattoo running up her arm from her hand to her shoulder. That's the one Liam wanted me to meet. I wasn't stupid. I could figure the situation easy enough. Both girls were interested in Liam and he wanted to keep them both on the hook. Two drinks later and Snake Girl was at least pretending to be interested in me. Her name was too confusing to remember, Something like Marie Elena or Marie Elena.
So you're a mechanic?
Liam said you rebuilt his Harley, she said.
Yeah. That's cool. What kind of bike do you ride?
A 56 Panhead.
You gonna take me out on it or what?
She smiled, but she was looking over my shoulder at Liam, watching him kiss the blonde girl. Whenever you're ready to go. I was long past ready to leave. I couldn't hardly make small talk with a girl to save my life, but having Liam there was 10 times worse. He made me nervous. While we were on the bike, Snake Girl acted like she was happy enough to be with me. Kept her arms around me, put her head on my shoulder. Once we got to the ranch, though, she was back to staring at Liam. The trailer was packed and the stereo was up so loud it made the floor shake. I couldn't hardly hear anything Snake Girl said. I leaned down to her and said, "Let's go outside where it's not as crowded." She didn't stop looking at Liam, but she nodded and followed me out through the living room to the porch. For a couple minutes, we sat on the glider, not talking, not even rocking. "So, what do you do?" I said. "Where do you work?"
"Not anywhere right now. Sandy said Liam might be looking for some people."
"Who's Sandy?"
"That blonde bitch," she said. Man, she was mad about that girl.
"You want to walk up in the meadow? It's pretty out there at night with the stars and all."
"No, thanks."
I couldn't think of anything else to talk about, but when I put my arm around her, she let me. She even let me kiss her for a minute before she turned her head. She tasted like cigarettes, so I didn't really care. I gave up, and then she reached down and unbuckled my belt. I was thinking we should go somewhere more private, but she started unzipping me right there. Didn't want to kiss me or talk to me, and now she had her hand on my dick. Took me long enough to sort it out. She wanted me to go away, and that was how she figured to do it. I was going to tell her to stop, but then I decided, what the hell? Being on the receiving end of that kind of brush-off was a lousy feeling, but maybe it wasn't any lousier than going home alone without a hand job. The snake's head on the back of her hand was weird, but if I leaned my head back and closed my eyes, I could kind of forget about it. Turned out to be about as exciting as doing it myself, and a lot more awkward. When it was over, she got up and went back inside. I zipped up, thinking about going out to the meadow by myself. Instead, I went back inside, where the party had shifted gears. People were making out all over the place, and Liam and the blonde had disappeared. I sat down on the end of one sofa and took a few hits off a bong on the coffee table. Then I took a few more hits. Dee sat next to me for a while, jiggling her foot until it made the whole sofa shake. I didn't try nothing, because probably the trip to Myrtle Beach was a one-time thing. Besides, she wouldn't even kiss me.
"So, did you lose your date?" she said.
"She only came out here for Liam."
Dee's foot jiggled faster.
"Sorry," I said. I didn't guess her life was all that fun sometimes. Not that I could figure why she stuck with Liam. He was good-looking, but the way he acted was messed up. Dee shrugged and stood up.
"I knew what I was getting into with him. I wonder if that bimbo he's with does."
Later, Snake Girl wandered in and sat on the sofa next to me like we were strangers. That was all right with me. She picked up the bong and started smoking. Just like I had on the porch, I leaned my head back and closed my eyes. I wished I could go home, but I was too fucked up to ride.
"Whose little girl is this?" said some woman with a sloppy drunk voice.
I sat up and opened my eyes. Wavy stood in the trailer doorway, wearing her nightgown and looking lost. "High as a fucking kite," Dee made a beeline for the door, saying,
"Wavy, baby, what are you doing here?"
Wavy dodged Dee's hand and Yvonne and Neil's legs, doing whatever they were doing on the other sofa. Before I could get on my feet, she came around the coffee table and wedged herself in beside me on the sofa.
"Hey, is everything all right?"
Wavy nodded.
"Is she okay?" Dee said.
"Yeah, she's fine."
"Should I maybe take her back home and put her to bed?"
Wavy scooted closer to me, resting her hand on my belly to steady herself. It seemed like an invitation, so I put my arm around her.
I'll take her home, I said. Snake Girl, who'd been crashed out on the other end of the sofa, sat up and said,
Where did she come from?
She's Liam's daughter, Dee said. Wavy glared at her. For the first time since Liam left the room, Snake Girl looked interested in something. She held her arms out and said,
Oh, she's so cute. Come here, sweetie. You want to come sit on my lap?
Wavy ignored Snake Girl and slid her arm around my neck. Then she laid her head on my shoulder. Her hair was wet. She won't come to you, Dee said. She won't sit on anyone's lap except Kellen's. He's your boyfriend, isn't he, Wavy? Wavy nodded, surprised me. So I was her boyfriend? How'd your hair get wet? I said. She pressed her cheek against mine and whispered,
Swimming.
You want a snack or something before Kellen takes you home? We have yummy brownies, Dee said. Those brownies have pot in 'em. I wish Dee would shut up and let Wavy talk to me. Her coming there like that to talk to me, it meant something. Before anybody else could say something stupid, Wavy put her lips to my ear and said,
Come into the meadow.
It made my skin prickle all over. I'd wanted to go out to the meadow before, and I'd got myself stuck at that stupid party. I scooted forward to the edge of the sofa and said, Saddle up. She put her arms around my neck and I gave her my hands for stirrups, like I was her horse and she was a cowgirl trying to make a quick escape from some hostile Indians. Except that I was the Indian, and we were both trying to escape from hostile saloon girls. It made better sense if I didn't think about it too hard, but it made me giggle. Out in the meadow, the hay was up past my waist, ready for cutting. Bugs chattered, went quiet as I walked by, and started up again once I was past. The air was less heavy out in the open, not hot and sticky the way it was around the trailers. It felt good to be out, getting further from the lights in the yard, so that I could see the stars overhead. I kept walking until Wavy pulled up on the reins, tugging on my t-shirt and pushing the heels of her boots into my hands. I got down on one knee to let her hop off, and when I stood back up, she took my hand. She led me past a stand of cottonwoods that made a windbreak for an old 500-gallon galvanized stock tank. There was just enough breeze to make the windmill blades creak and make the pipe dribble water. The tank looked black and bottomless at night. I wouldn't be brave enough to swim in it, but she was. Up above the cottonwoods, there was a bluff cut into the hill. In between, there was an open patch of hay. The grass was tamped down in a circle just about her size. It was what I wanted before, someone to lie out under the stars with me. I could see how it never would have worked with Snake Girl. She was only interested in bikes, getting high, and Liam. Wavy, though, she smiled at me like she was inviting me into her house. I flattened a bigger section of the hay, enough room for both of us. When I spread my arms out, she laid down next to me and rested her head on my arm. I felt so weird inside my skin, like the stars were pressing me down into the earth, pressing Wavy's head down on me. Part of that was the weed, I knew, but it was the stars, too. All that light traveling from so far away. I held my breath, kind of waiting. Usually we looked at the stars after dinner, out in front of the farmhouse, playing with Donald. Wavy would start by pointing out a few constellations, and then I'd pick out some I knew, or thought I knew. Ursa Major, I said, trying to get her to start. I could always pick that one out, Big Dipper. Except I couldn't find it. She cleared her throat like she was scolding me, but it was just to tease.
Cassiopeia.
She lifted her hand up, drew it out for me. 5 stars zigzagging.
Cepheus.
4 stars that made a triangle, plus a 5th that dropped down like a kite tail. I couldn't keep track, but after she finished, I was pretty sure that wasn't all of them. What about Orion? Which one's Orion? She turned on her side, laid her hand on my belly, and slid it down to my belt buckle. I had to grip my teeth not to squirm. She had a way of making me feel ticklish. Right, Orion's the one with the belt, with the 3 stars, but I don't see it.
October.
Really? It's not out till October. We'll have to come back in October then. Then I saw a shooting star. I was trying to remember how that was supposed to go, to wish on it, when I saw another one, and then another. Thinking I must be imagining it, I said, "Did you see that falling star?" Right as I did, another one flew across the sky.
"Perseid," Wavy said.
"Persei what?"
"Perseid meteor shower."
Another one shot past Cassiopeia like an arrow. "Wow." She nodded against my arm, and after that, we were quiet. We didn't need to talk. We just laid there watching falling stars go streaking white through all that darkness.
Part 2 1. Kellen. December 1979. In high school in Oklahoma, there was this girl I liked. And one night after I went out drinking, I climbed up to her bedroom window. In bed, she let me kiss her and grope her a little, but then she told me to get lost. She really only liked my bike. Not me so much. Climbing up to her window, though, that was fun. What old man Kutchin called shenanigans. Climbing the trellis under Wavy's window felt like shenanigans, but as soon as I knocked on the sash, I realized I was too drunk and being stupid. I shouldn't have been riding, let alone climbing up to her window. I would have gone back down, but Wavy opened the window before I could. I guess she'd heard the bike coming up the road. I crawled over the sill and managed to scramble into her room without busting my ass. She closed the window and stood there like a ghost in her nightgown, waiting for me to say something. Well, yeah, since I just crawled in her bedroom window in the middle of the night. "I brought you a present," I said.
"Not Christmas yet."
"No, not Christmas. It's a birthday present."
"July."
"I know your birthday's in July. I'm a little drunk. It's actually my birthday. I brought you a present for my birthday."
"Today?"
"Yeah, today's my birthday. Well, yesterday. I think it's past midnight already." Her teeth flashed in the dark and she took hold of my hand, pulled me toward the bed. It was the only place for me to sit down, but that spooked me. Made me think about climbing through that other girl's window to get in bed with her. "No, sweetheart, I just came to bring you a present." I'd carried it tucked flat into the back of my waistband, but when I pulled it out, I dropped it on the floor. Before I could pick it up, she pulled me another step toward the bed.
"Cold,"
she said. "Yeah, you need to get back in bed. I let all the cold in opening the window."
"You?"
"I was cold." When Wavy held the covers open for me, I sat down on the edge of the bed. I shrugged out of my motorcycle jacket and kicked off my boots. Left my jeans, belt, and shirt on. Drunk as I was, that seemed okay. She was in her nightgown, but I was still dressed. Getting under the covers was easy enough. I fluffed the quilts and tucked them around both of us, since my arms were long enough to arrange it all. She huddled up along my side, shivering, and rubbed her feet against my leg, trying to warm up. Once I got my arm around her and she laid her head on my shoulder, we were warm and comfortable and ready to go to sleep. And that was the goddamn problem. This wasn't the same as falling asleep next to Wavy in the meadow. I was in bed with her. If Val came upstairs and found me there, I couldn't exactly say I was too comfortable to leave. "Wavy, I better go." She shook her head. "I can't stay here." She dug her chin into my arm. A nod? "Seriously, sweetheart, I can't." Her answer was so quiet, I wasn't sure I heard it right. I didn't want to be sure, except I needed to be sure. It felt like two dogs were playing tug-of-war with my heart. She wouldn't say it again, and it turned out I wanted to know more than I didn't want to know. "You love me?" I said. The sharp chin again. Twice. There weren't many things she thought were worth nodding twice for. "I love you, too." "I love you." I said it twice, to be sure she heard it. I shivered, not cold anymore, but knowing that saying it out loud made it real. For a long time, it was this sneaking feeling I didn't look at too closely. But now I'd said it, I laid awake for a while, feeling her breath on my arm. But finally, being warm and comfortable and drunk caught up with me, and I fell asleep. I woke up needing to piss, with my dick hard as a rock first thing in the morning, and there I was in Wavy's bed, with her curled up next to me. When I went to get up, she held on to me.
"Present,"
she mumbled. "Yeah, here, let me up. You think your mom will wake up if I go down to the bathroom?"
"Window."
"Sure, I can leave the way I came."
"I won't look."
Her eyes were squeezed shut against the sun coming up, but she turned her head away, too. It was the quickest fix, so I lifted up the window sash and undid my zipper. The cold took care of my hard-on right quick. Wavy giggled at the sound of piss splattering and freezing on the metal porch roof, but she kept her face hidden until I zipped up and closed the window.
"Present."
She must have been feeling brave, all that talking and the way she looked at me. Her present was on the floor where I'd dropped it the night before. Seeing it in daylight, I was embarrassed it was something so cheap. I'd thought it was magical when I bought it and when she took it from me. It still was. Her face lit up, so she was half angel and half little girl with sleep wrinkles on her face.
"They glow?"
she said. "Yeah, and you stick them up on your ceiling, so you can have stars even when it's cloudy like last night. So you can see Orion all year round."
"Wonderful."
She said it so soft it wasn't even a whisper. "I better go. I don't think Val would be too happy about me being up here." Wavy shrugged. I pulled on my boots and jacket before I opened the window again. Looking at the trellis, I couldn't believe I'd climbed up it in the middle of the night. Stupid as hell. So the boots had to come off again, and I tiptoed down the stairs behind Wavy. In the kitchen, I tugged my boots on while Wavy waited in her bare feet. When I reached for the knob on the kitchen door, she put her hand on my arm.
"Nothing for your birthday," she said.
"Not nothing. You gave me the best present I've had in a long time." Since she didn't step back from me, I took her face in both my hands, turned it up so I could lean down and kiss her. On the mouth, but nothing dirty. The kind of kiss you give someone you love. She smiled up at me. A real smile, with teeth and dimples and the whole shebang.
2. Amy. December 1979. After Thanksgiving, Mom started calling Aunt Val and saying, "We want the kids to come for Christmas. If you'll tell me how to find your house, I'll come get them." But Aunt Val wouldn't. Mom finally gave up, but 4 days before Christmas, this little bald man showed up to drop them off. He didn't even bother to take the cigarette out of his mouth to introduce himself to Mom. His name was Butch, and he was a business associate of Uncle Liam's, he said. He told Mom that somebody else would come pick Wavy and Donald up, but he didn't say who or when. Until then, they were all ours. Dad made Wavy promise not to sneak out, but that didn't keep her from doing other weird things. At the rehearsal for the church Christmas pageant, Donald got cast as a shepherd and the choir director cast Wavy as an angel.
"That's probably not a good idea," said Leslie, who had been passed over as the Virgin Mary every year and twice was stuck being the innkeeper, the jerk who makes Jesus get born in a barn. Now that she was too old to be in the pageant, she helped the choir director corral angels. She didn't want to corral Wavy.
"Why not?" the director said. "She won't talk or sing," I said. In my last year in the pageant, I was the third wise man. That's the problem with the Christmas story. Most of the roles are for boys. The only girl is there because men can't have babies.
"And she does things,"
Leslie said, but the choir director wasn't listening. Wavy already wore a white dress, so for the rehearsal, all she needed was a halo and a pair of wings. Even without those things, she looked like an angel. The rehearsal went fine until we broke for our snack. When we returned to the sanctuary, the baby Jesus was missing. Like in a crime drama, the only things left behind in the straw were his swaddling clothes. The adults searched through piles of costumes and boxes of decorations. The church ladies accused each other.
"I put it in the manger,"
I always put it in the manger, said one.
Him,
another lady said.
Our Lord Jesus is not an it.
The choir director accused the Virgin Mary, who cried, and then the Virgin Mary's mother yelled at the choir director. In the middle of the drama, Wavy leaned close to me and whispered,
Dust Bunny.
This isn't just some baby doll, I said. This baby Jesus has been in the church's Christmas pageant every year for a long time. Wavy gave me the small, sneaky smile I knew so well. She had dust bunnied the baby Jesus.
Let's look under the pews, I said to Leslie.
So we crawled through the sanctuary searching under the pews. The other kids started looking too, and 5 minutes later, the head shepherd said,
I found it!
I cornered Wavy on the steps to the choir loft and said,
Why did you do that?
Easter egg hunt.
That's what church was to Wavy, a set of games she didn't quite understand. I laughed, Wavy laughed, and the choir director yelled,
Who's giggling in the loft? And where's my third wise man? Please, can we focus?
In Sunday school, we were supposed to make Christmas cards to deliver to church members who were too sick to come to church. Wavy cut out the wise men and the livestock, colored them in shades of purple and green, and glued them all around the edge of her card. She left Mary and Joseph and Jesus in a pile of cut-out paper on the table. Inside her card, where we were supposed to write Bible verses, Wavy wrote, Dear Kellen. I didn't get to read what she wrote after that, and neither did anyone else. When the teacher came around to look at our cards, Wavy wouldn't let her.
Why not, sweetie? Just let me see.
The teacher took a step closer and Wavy ran. For the rest of Sunday school she hid, and for the pageant, too. So the choir director didn't get her perfect blonde angel to stand front and center and refuse to sing. After the pageant was over, as Mom was about to panic, Wavy walked out from behind the baptistry. Back at home, Dad sat on the couch, reading his work papers, while Leslie, Donald, and I tore into our presents. Wavy had presents, too, but all she wanted for Christmas was an envelope and a stamp.
Who's the card for?
Mom said. Once it was safely sealed in the envelope and addressed, Wavy passed it to her.
Jesse Joe Kellen, this is the boy who calls you Wavy?
Is he your boyfriend? Leslie was in eighth grade that year and had gone completely boy crazy, and Dad's mom was just as bad.
What color are his eyes? Blue?
Brown? Grandma Jane said. Wavy nodded and said,
Soft.
Soft brown eyes are very nice.
Is he in your class at school?
Wavy shook her head.
Well, is he younger than you? Or older?
Grandma Jane said. Older. They went on asking questions about Kellen, and to my surprise, Wavy answered. He had a shy smile, and Wavy got to ride on his bike.
Mom, stop. You're embarrassing her, Dad said.
She likes it, Grandma Jane said. Every girl likes to talk about the boy she likes. And he likes you too, doesn't he?
He loves me.
Wavy followed the confession with one of her rare dimpled smiles. Mom thought it was so cute that she told the story to her book club friends when they came over for New Year's. Wasn't it sweet how her tragic 10-year-old niece had a little boyfriend who loved her? It was sweet, until Mom met Kellen. We were in the kitchen, getting ready to leave for our music lessons, and Mom was arguing with Donald about his Christmas toys.
Donald, we're going to come back to the house and get them, okay? You don't have to take them all with you. Wavy, will you tell him?
Wavy shrugged, maybe because in her experience, you didn't always get to go back for your toys. The doorbell rang and Mom sent me to answer it. On the front porch stood a huge man in jeans and a snap-front western shirt. He said,
Hey, I'm Kellen. I'm here to get Wavy and Donald.
I left them in the entryway and ran back to the kitchen.
Who was it?
Mom said.
Kellen. He's here to get them.
Donald dropped his toys and ran out of the kitchen shouting,
Kellen!
Wavy went after him. Still in our coats, we trundled into the front hall where Kellen swooped Donald up so high he almost knocked his head on the ceiling. Wavy smiled while Donald talked nonstop. Now that he was talking, that was all he did.
And the Jesus baby was missing, and we crawled around on the floor to find it. and I wore a towel on my head. I was a shepherd. They wore towels on their heads. And Wavy was an angel. She had a halo, and...
Who is he? Mom whispered to me.
He said his name was Kellen.
Is he Jesse Joe's father?
Mom opened her purse, rattling her keys to be sure her can of mace was there.
Excuse me, she said. I'm Brenda Newling.
Kellen set Donald down and came toward my mother with his hand out.
Good to meet you. I'm Jesse Joe Kellen.
I watched my mother's face as reality crowded out the story she'd invented. She had imagined little Jesse Joe as the sort of shy young man a quiet, wounded girl like Wavy could befriend. In Mom's fairy tale, they held hands and shared secrets and would someday go away to college and have good lives if properly encouraged by a supportive aunt. Soft brown eyes and a shy smile, Wavy had said. His eyes were almost sleepy as he offered his hand to my mother, and a big gold cap studded the middle of his shy smile. Behemoth was the word my mother used to describe him to her book club friends, and he was enormous. Bigger than the Incredible Hulk on TV. Even though he wasn't green, Mom recoiled from the hand he offered. His shirt sleeves were cuffed back, revealing several tattoos, including one in a horseshoe shape. In the center of it was a four-leaf clover and the words, "Lucky Motherfucker." This was Wavy's little boyfriend. My mother stepped back and bumped into Leslie. Kellen still had his hand out, offering to shake, but he withdrew it and rested it on Wavy's shoulder. She didn't shake him off, like she would have with anyone else.
"Well, this is really inconvenient," Mom blurted. "No one called to say that they were leaving today. It's unreasonable for Val to expect—"
Kellen wasn't listening. He'd gone down on one knee so that he was eye to eye with Wavy. While he looked at her, the rest of us didn't exist. Wavy whispered something into his ear, and he answered, "I got your letter. I missed you, too." All of that was shocking enough, but then she kissed him on the cheek. Unheard of.
"Mom, I'm going to be late to my lesson," Leslie said.
Only she would be upset about that. I dreamed of reasons to keep me from my violin lessons. My mother cleared her throat and said,
"Mr. Kellen, we have an appointment to go to. Perhaps you could come back this evening to discuss this."
I guess Val forgot to call.
Kellen finally took his eyes off Wavy and got to his feet.
"I guess so. If you'll excuse us, we need to leave. Come on, kids."
"Why can't I go with Kellen?" Donald said.
"Because I haven't spoken to your mother yet."
My mother rattled her car keys.
"Now come on. Why don't you girls walk Mr. Kellen out while I get the car? Don't forget to lock the front door."
I was thrilled to stand in the entryway with Kellen. He had alarmed my mother and received a kiss from Wavy. As they parted on the front porch, Kellen reached out and ran his hand over Wavy's hair, all down her back. She turned and smiled at him. At the music school, while Leslie was having her lesson, Mom scooted her chair next to Wavy's and whispered, "Who is that man?"
"Kellen."
"Jesse Joe Kellen? The person you sent the Christmas card to?"
Wavy nodded.
"How old is he?"
Wavy shrugged. When Dad came home from work, he and Mom went into the den and argued for half an hour. Then Mom came out and called Aunt Val. The phone rang for ages before Aunt Val answered. Mom's whole face clenched up and she said,
"Some man came here today to pick up your children. He said his name was Kellen. I was under the impression that Jesse Joe Kellen was a very young man, since Wavy told us he was her boyfriend." There was a long pause as my mother wound the phone cord around her finger and then released it. Her face relaxed a little, and she laughed. "Of course I know girls get crushes, but I am not about to hand your children over to some stranger who claims you sent him."
"Yes, not a stranger to her, but she's only 10. She can't be expected to look out for herself. It is not..." My mother was going to have the last word until the doorbell rang. Dad answered it, and the sound of Kellen introducing himself ended Mom's conversation with Aunt Val. Donald had been playing with his cars on the floor, but he was up in an instant, running into the front hall. When Kellen stepped into the room, he had a giggling Donald slung over his shoulder. Dad shrugged at Mom and said,
"Are you kids ready to go?"
For once, Wavy led the packing.
As Mom watched from the doorway, Kellen held the bag for Wavy to put Donald's things in. Next to my bed was a pile of Christmas presents that technically belonged to Wavy, including a blonde Darcy cover model doll, two stuffed Smurfs, and a Mork and Mindy lunchbox. Ignoring all of that, Wavy pulled the book on constellations out of the pile. She handed it to Kellen with a smile and said, "For you."
Mom had been particularly proud of that book, something Wavy would like. Obviously, she did like it if she was giving it to Kellen, but my mother acted like Wavy had spit in her face. After they were gone, Mom called her friend Sheila and said, "I just don't know what to do about my niece." I think she only said it to be saying it, because I'd heard enough of her fights with Dad to know there were only three things we could do about Wavy. We could let her and Donald come live with us. We could call Child Protective Services. Or we could leave well enough alone. I didn't know exactly what that meant. But it was always the decision Mom and Dad came to.
3. Kellen. August 1980. All Liam said about the pickup in Nacogdoches was, "Your job is to be the biggest, scariest son of a bitch in the room." I should have known it wasn't going to be that simple. What was supposed to take 2 days took 4, and when it was over, I'd done the one damn thing I'd always told Liam I wouldn't do. I killed somebody. Driving home, I told myself it was different from Liam sending me to kill some guy on purpose. I didn't go down to Texas planning to kill them two Mexicans. They tried to kill me first. That was bad enough. But then Vic's car broke down, and there we were on the side of the road with 20 kilos of coke in the trunk, plus the cash for the buy. Vic drove this white 74 Eldorado Biritz with red tufted leather seats. The car was waxed and polished and armor-alled like a showroom model, but under the hood, it was a goddamn mess. "How long has it been since you changed the fucking oil?" I said. Stupid bastard shrugged. I'd been trying to keep my temper under control lately, stop getting in fights, but I couldn't believe he was that stupid. I punched him. "What the fuck?" Vic screamed, catching blood from his nose before it could drip on his shirt. "You tell me what the fuck, you driving around in a car that doesn't run. Do you think we can just flag down the highway patrol and get a tow?" I pushed the car off the main road, sweating through the last pair of clean clothes I had. Then I spent 2 hours wedged up under the car, trying to get the bitch started. We limped it to the next town, but there's no way that car was going to make it back to Powell. So I called Danny at the shop and said, "Bring the flatbed." "Wouldn't it be easier to get a tow from there?" Danny was a good kid, but he smoked too much dope. "Bring the tow truck. Tell Liam we're running late." 6 hours later, we had the car on the flatbed and got headed back to the ranch. I drove. As tired as I was too pissed to put up with Danny or Vic driving. People said I was stupid, but at least I could follow some basic rules. Like, don't go on a drug buy in a car that might break down. It was past 10 when we got to the ranch, and Dee smirked at me while Liam tore me a new asshole. Like it was my fault the Mexicans tried to double deal. Like it was my fault Vic's car broke down. God damn. I was done with Liam Quinn. Or I would have been done with him if it wasn't for Wavy. I left the flatbed there and rode the panhead home just to get some fresh air on me. At the house, I was through the front door pulling off my boots before I realized the kitchen light was on. Thinking of those dead Mexicans, my guts tightened up. Those boys probably had friends who wouldn't think much of me plugging them. I walked into the kitchen and leveled my gun right in Wavy's face. "What are you doing?" I said. The no sleep and the running on nerves caught up with me. My hands were shaking as I popped the clip. I slammed open the kitchen drawer and shoved the gun to the back. Wavy looked as shocked as I felt. She was sitting at the table up on 2 phone books with her boots off, her bare feet dangling. The overhead light made her hair gold. "Come on, pack your stuff up, I'll give you a ride home." The back of my shirt was filthy from lying in the dirt working on Vic's car. Her white sundress was going to end up covered in it, but that was too bad. I went stomping back to the front door to get my boots on, but she didn't come. When I went back to the kitchen, she was still sitting at the table, reading a magazine. Now. Goddamn right now. I'm not in the mood for this.
Walk.
She slid off the phone books and stood in her bare feet. No, you're not walking home.
Walked here.
Yeah, well, it wasn't pitch black out when you walked here either.
She shrugged.
And how'd you get in here? She took a key out of her dress pocket and laid it on the table, the spare from under the mat on the back porch. Looking down at the key, I got an eyeful of the magazine she'd been reading, a skin mag from out of my nightstand. She had it open to a couple things I didn't like to think she'd looked at. A blowjob on one page and some girl taking it from behind on the other. What are you doing looking at this fucking shit? You can't be looking at this kind of thing. And where the hell do you get off just coming in here and making yourself at home? This is my house. I snatched that magazine off the table and rolled it up. She flinched like she thought I was gonna hit her with it, the way you'd do a dog. Seeing her ready for me to hit her was a bucket of cold water on me. If I couldn't be any better to her than that, I didn't have any business thinking I was sticking around for her. It's my house, okay? You can't come in here without me. She gave me the kind of look makes you want to curl up and die. Just because she didn't have any titty mags for me to look at didn't mean I hadn't snooped in her bedroom. I went around the table, opened the sink cabinet, and stuffed the magazine in the trash. I'm sorry. But I haven't slept in 2 days. I'm fucking dirty and greasy and tired, and I need a shower and something to eat, and there isn't so much as a clean shirt in this goddamn house because I had to leave in a hurry. So I'm sorry, but I don't have... I came that close to saying, I don't have time for you. Except it wasn't just mean. It was a lie. I had all the time in the world for her. I wanted her to be there, but I was so miserable, I couldn't even talk to her like I normally would. I didn't have no business saying, sorry, I'm in such a shitty mood, but I just killed a couple guys. She walked out to the breezeway, so I said, the bike's out front, sweetheart. She came back with a bundle of cloth in her hands. She held it out to me, a t-shirt, jeans, and a towel, washed, dried, and folded. She did my laundry. Thank you. And I'm sorry. I'm just tired, and I had a bad couple days. I reached out to take the clean clothes, but she pulled them back and frowned at me. My hands were covered in grease. I followed her to the bathroom where she laid the clean clothes on the edge of the sink and turned on the shower. She went out, closing the door after her. In the shower, I spent a good 15 minutes letting the hot water pound down on me, trying to be finished with the 2 dead Mexicans. I needed to stop playing that over in my head. It was done. By the time I got out of the shower, Wavy was gone. I worried she'd walked home, but her backpack was still in the kitchen. Weirder, she'd emptied my wallet. It was in the center of the table with its chain coiled up beside it. Laid out next to it like a game of solitaire was all the stuff I kept in my wallet and my pockets. A roll of wintergreen lifesavers, my keys, a bottle of eye drops, and 5 shell casings standing on end. I pocketed those. I'd cleaned and tossed the gun, but forgotten to ditch the shell casings. I guess I wasn't much smarter than Vic. I was about to put my wallet to rights when Wavy came through the back door carrying a grocery sack from the store up the road. She dragged a chair to the counter and emptied the bag. A package of liver, an onion, a green pepper, a carton of eggs, and a box of ice cream sandwiches. I think I already got some ice cream sandwiches. She shook her head. You ate my ice cream sandwiches? An embarrassed nod. That's okay. I'm sorry about what I said before. It's okay for you to come here. I was so tired I sat down at the table and drank a beer while I waited. In 15 minutes I had a steaming plate of liver with onions and peppers. While I ate, she counted my change into piles and sorted through the stuff laid out on the table. She sniffed the lifesavers and then traced her finger around the spot where the shell casings had stood. Those were trash, I said. She went through all the cards as she put them back in my wallet. My driver's license, my library card, my blood donor card.
O negative,
she mouthed. Then she hit on a card that made her frown. She primed herself with a big breath and said it out loud.
Barfoot.
I used to have a different name. I put out my hand and she gave me my old tribal ID card with my father's name on it. I was junior when I was a kid, but after he kicked me out, I started going by my granny's name. Tipping back in my chair, I pitched the old card into the trash. I finished my dinner while Wavy watched me. I was never sure what that meant, her watching me eat. I figured she must like it or she wouldn't take so much trouble to feed me. I'm about done in, so I better take you home before I fall asleep, I said.
Mama.
It made my skin crawl the way she said it. Like you'd say tornado if one was bearing down on you. What about Val? Wavy brought her hands to her head and made her fingers stand up like antlers. Or flames? Is she acting weird? Where's Donald?
Sandy.
Wavy came around the table behind me and rested her hands on my shoulders.
Can I stay?
I don't know. Let's not. I didn't even remember what I was gonna say after she tightened her hands on my shoulders. She squeezed the spot where I'd gotten all bunched up from the stress. When I got down on the kitchen floor, she took off her boots and walked on my back.
What happened? She said.
I knew if I didn't answer, she'd never ask again. Part of me wanted to do that, but I couldn't keep it in with her waiting to listen to me. She knew how to keep a secret. I killed some guys. This job Liam sent me on down in Texas, it got all fucked up and I shot these two guys. She stopped walking her feet on either side of my spine.
Who?
She said. A couple of drug dealers. So not any kind of good guys, but I guess that makes me about the same. Not any kind of good guy. It didn't surprise me when she stepped off my back. I didn't blame her if she didn't want to be around me. I'd thought I could stick it out with Liam, to stay close to Wavy, but maybe all I was doing was turning into Liam. I'll take you home, I said. No. She got down on her knees and slung her leg over me. There I was, thinking she'd want to leave, but she laid on top of me and pressed her cheek against mine. She didn't have to say anything, because I knew what that meant. She still thought I was a good guy. I drifted off for a second and jerked awake. Daylight was coming through the window over the sink. I'd fallen asleep on the kitchen floor and slept the whole night in a blink. When I was younger, I used to get so drunk I passed out, but I hadn't done that in years. On the other side of the table, Wavy was working her feet into her boots. Hey, I said. I was worried it would startle her, but she'd known I was awake. She stamped her feet to seat the boots and pulled on her backpack. Let me get myself together and I'll take you home. I got up, stiff in weird places from sleeping face down on the floor, but at least my back didn't hurt anymore. In my bedroom there was a rumpled spot on the bed where Wavy must have slept. Still warm when I laid my hand on it. In the bathroom, a second damp towel was hanging next to mine, so she'd had herself a shower, too. I took a piss and then splashed cold water on my face, trying to get things into focus. In the kitchen, Wavy was standing right where I left her. When I sat down to pull on my boots, she slid a piece of paper across the table to me. Her school registration form. She'd filled it all out, but she needed a parent's signature and the $12 to register. Nobody had registered her for school, and that morning was the first day. I couldn't pass myself off as Val, but I was getting pretty good at playing Liam.
4. Wavy. Mrs. Norton said, I want each of you to stand up and say your name and one thing you did this summer. Whispers bubbled up all over the classroom like butter on a skillet before you pour eggs in. We went down the rows, following the alphabet, so I was near the end. Maybe something would happen before they got to me. Maybe the fire alarm would go off, or maybe there would be a tornado like last spring. We all went into the hallway behind the gymnasium and lots of kids cried. I liked the darkness and waiting for a tornado to tear the school away. Nothing like that happened. It never did when you wanted it to. The girl next to me stood up when it was her turn. Her name was Caroline Peters, and over the summer she visited her grandmother in California, where she went to Disneyland and rolled roller coasters and saw Mickey Mouse and... That's enough, Caroline, Mrs. Norton said. One thing.
Then it was my turn. I had things to tell. I visited my cousins. I learned to replace spark plugs on the panhead. I watched stars with Kellen in the meadow. I taught Donald to swim. I took care of Kellen when he was